You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Good morning to you. Doug Gottlieb, Jason McIntyre, in for Dan and the Danettes. It's the Dan Patrick Show, live on Fox Sports Radio. Reminder, there's still time to save on a Traeger wood-fired grill during Father's Day sale. Go to Traeger.com/DP Show and score a free ultimate grill bundle worth $150 with the purchase of select grills. Or save $100 on select grills at your local dealer. Like, that is just such a layup, right? If you got a dad or a brother, you know, or you're somebody's wife or significant other, like, buying a Traeger grill is a no-brainer. So too, Jason, is the NBA this time of year and injuries this time of year. We can get into LeBron a couple days ago and what he said about basically blaming COVID on this rash of injuries to All-Stars. But you got the Brooklyn Nets last night, still banged up. James Harden, I don't know what percentage of real James Harden we had, but it's not 100% James Harden. Kevin Durant, a good effort, but not the Herculean effort he was able to put together in Game 5. And the Bucks are able to draw the series equal, right? Is there, can you come away with any big takeaway after you watch Game 6?
Well, Doug, of course you can. First of all, happy early Father's Day weekend to you, Doug. Shout out to my father for an early Father's Day weekend. I do not feel great, though, about Mike Budenholzer and Doc Rivers heading into Father's Day weekend. This could be a tough one for him. I will say, Doug, I said after Game 5, you know, like you said, a Herculean effort from Kevin Durant led them to the win. But look at the last two games, Doug, okay? The Bucks have basically outplayed the Nets in 5 of the 8 quarters. One was a standstill. Other than Kevin Durant going postal in like the final 16 minutes of Game 5, the Bucks have been the better team. And I know they have the worst coach. I know they have the worst superstar. I know they're on the road. But I think I'm going to talk myself into the Milwaukee Bucks, who were favored by Vegas heading into Game 7. I think I may take the Bucks, and which is, you know, obviously a hold-your-nose play on Father's Day weekend.
Okay. Well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen as far as who plays. And this does get into tonight's game a little bit, right? And we're like, when Kawhi went down with a knee injury, which, though it hasn't officially been announced as a torn ACL out for the year, that all signs point to that. When Kawhi went down, I said on my show, and by the way, you can check out Jason's Straight Fire podcast, which he drops in a daily, and then you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, which is daily on Fox Sports Radio, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. When an injury initially happened, I said, like, look at Brooklyn, or obviously look at the Clippers and what they were able to do going back to their last game in Game 5, which is that first game when the team is down a guy or down two guys, and the favorite team won, there's just expectations that they're going to win, right? There's just it's impossible not to think when Kawhi Leonard went down, this series is over. It's impossible not to think that when Kyrie Irving and James Harden are both out, you're like, this series is over. But you got to keep in mind that, one, the expectations, I think, weigh heavy. Two, you got to, as we've seen with Ty Lue, like, you got to adjust to things that change and lineups and matchups that change, right? And the Nets and the Clippers have both played without some of their stars previously in both of the past couple of seasons. Right? So they've had to adjust to how they play, but your whole game plan to how you guard them in the rotations is different. So that first game, you kind of get an initial bump. It's almost like post debate bumps, or when you add your vice presidential candidate, you get a little bump, and that's really what happened. And now we kind of settle back down into the reality, which is, and I think we'll settle down into that tonight with the Clippers and the Jazz, which is like, look, the Clippers just aren't as good, and you can adjust to the adjustment. And the same thing with the Nets. I wouldn't call it just yet, because I don't know for sure Kyrie's not going to play. And I do think that James Harden did move better in game six than he did in Game 5.
Yeah.
And if he can move better in Game 7 than he did in Game 6, which is far better than Game 5, again, it becomes a different series and a different look. Yeah. But the end story is like, this is kind of how the NBA playoffs have always been.
Oh, kind of
how it's always been. It's always been the team that's not only the best, but the team that's the healthiest has a tendency to win.
Well, the only problem happens. The only problem with that is the numbers say otherwise, that this has been the first season where there have been 8 All-Stars who have missed a playoff game. That's an NBA record. There have been more stars missing games this playoffs, and that doesn't include Chris Paul, who due to COVID may miss the first, I don't know, 2 or 3 games of the Western Conference Finals. Again, there's a lot to be determined there, but you know, this Jazz team had the Clippers. They had them choked out, okay, after the first 2 games. And you got Donovan Mitchell now is hurt. He's not driving. He's settling for bad 3-pointers. Mike Conley, who has a hamstring injury from hell and can't play, he apparently had a setback to his setback. And Mike Conley now, it doesn't sound like he's going to play tonight. I have no faith in the Jazz, but I'm going to say this. Doug, people have been killing me for the last few weeks about my Ty Lue takes. All I have said is, man, we don't know if Ty Lue's a good coach. He comes in, has
he's
LeBron, and wins
coach.
A title. Okay?
He's an
and now, then he gets fired the next season, like a week or two into the season. We get it. You know, they were rebuilding. And now he's filling in with the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard. So when you've had 2 of the, I don't know, 5 best players of the last decade in LeBron and Kawhi, how can we accurately judge Ty Lue? He doesn't play Terrence Mann the first 2 games of this series. They lose. Oh, wait, maybe I should play Terrence Mann. Oh, yeah, Terrence Mann's kind of a difference maker off the bench. He gives him massive energy, and now they're winning games. So, like, you know, we got former Ty Lue guys coming after me, and I know a guy on the Clipper staff, Dante Jones. We go way back from FS1. And yes, the Clippers have done good things. But, Doug, every single time in the last 2 playoffs that you want to trust the Clippers, what do? They choke. They gag it up. And I have zero faith in them closing out the series tonight, although on paper, they should win it. You know, Utah's backcourt is just so injured. Rudy Gobert is such a non-factor in the series. I mean, Doug, you do a lot of coaching. You know that when they identify wherever Rudy Gobert is, they're going right at him. The Stifle Tower can keep him out of the lane, but man, you put him in that pick and roll and they're eating him alive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all they've decided to go small, right? They even played Rondo and Patrick Beverley together. It wasn't very good, but they did play them together. I mean, look, if you watch the playoffs and you don't think Ty Lue's done an excellent job, I can't really help you.
But Doug, hold on.
I can't really help you.
Every time he goes on the court, he's got maybe the 2 best players. Okay? You know, I know Luka was amazing in the first round. I think Luka's probably the best player in the league, but he's also got Kawhi, Paul George. Morris is better than the number 2 on Dallas. I mean, the Utah team is good. You know, I know they won 50 games,
but let's be realistic. Marcus Morris is better than there's a reason Marcus Morris has bounced around the league.
Bro, Morris has 49 points in the last 2 games.
Yes, why is that?
8 of 10 on threes.
Why is that?
Well, he's a pretty decent player. He got a lot of
money.
Why
is that? Let's go back to why is that.
Jason
McIntyre, Doug Gottlieb, in for Dan the Danettes here on Fox Sports Radio. Because they've decided to go small, so Marcus Morris matches up with Rudy Gobert and allows Marcus Morris to stand outside and shoot threes. It's a matchup thing. And because the Jazz haven't made them pay go into any screen roll and throw it to the rim, okay? And because Gobert can't really score at the block, they've been able, you know, to stretch out the defense, right? Like it's one of those.
Right, but this isn't rocket science. Like they started Zubac, the big guy against Mavs. They got destroyed. Oh, we've got to get him out of there. Like
they didn't get destroyed the first 2 games. And Utah's a pretty good team, and you got to kind of figure it out. You have no idea what you're managing with the Game 7 series that they had last time with fatigue, right? If you don't think the easiest example is if you think it's easy to coach guys that can really, really play, you know, like, look, every team is constructed differently. Every team is constructed differently, right? This Clippers team, for example, is constructed around 2 stars. If it was so easy, why couldn't Doc Rivers win last year?
We know historically has been a terrible postseason coach. He's the only coach in NBA history to blow 3 3-1 leads. Okay. I just, when you look at the Vegas odds, you know, I do a ton of gambling stuff, Doug. The Clippers were the favorites last year. Okay. They failed. They now came into this season. The Lakers were favored in the West. The Nets were overall favorites. Anthony Davis goes out. It's like, okay, Clippers, the seas have parted for you. Win the damn West. And all they do is fall behind in series, Doug.
Okay, but they fell behind. Like, it does. It's a 7-game series. They don't give any awards if you go up 2-0. They don't go, hey, oh, you're up 2-0? You know what? Let's just call it off, right? So it was 2-2. They lose the best or second best player in the league.
Yeah.
They go in and they beat the Utah Jazz, and you're still beating the drum against Ty Lue? Like, what?
I'm not. It's not against.
For people who don't know, Jason and I are actually heaping
major praise on people. I just say it's too early for me to know if Ty Lue's a good coach. Is that okay?
Here's the issue. Here's the issue. Everything you say is result-oriented, right? Result-oriented. That if the ball goes in, you're a genius. If the ball doesn't go in, you're an idiot, right? That's basically your reaction, which is okay. That's the way in which you evaluate the validity of your takes or the validity of players.
I don't think that's totally fair.
It's absolutely fair. Okay? If the Clippers, win a series, well, then Ty Lue did great. If they don't win a series, well, then he's an idiot.
Because timeout.
Look, you're not taking any nuance into it.
There is nuance. There's tons of it.
No, there's not. Okay?
How is there not?
The Clippers failed last year. Like, dude, they're in the bubble. They had Lou Williams going out and getting hot wings when they're supposed to be on quarantine. They hadn't been together all year, and they fizzled apart. And the Lakers, who end up winning the championship, were just as close to the edge, but several things happened in their favor.
They had leadership in the locker room in LeBron James. Doc Rivers was not a leader. Kawhi Leonard is not a leader. Paul George is not a leader. We know this. It's established history.
They did have leadership, but
Where? They also.
No, I'm talking the Lakers. They also. Again, you're taking away from the fact that they played. They had a matchup against the Rockets, who could not beat them. The Rockets had no chance of beating the Lakers last year. Additionally, when they were on the brink of fizzling apart, they got 2 games off because of the Kenosha protests, and it helped them kind of recharge their batteries. Then their families arrived, okay, and that's a different makeup of a team than the Clippers. The Lakers didn't want to be in the bubble either, okay? A lot of those teams didn't want to be in the bubble. A bunch of other teams lost in the bubble because they just weren't functioning correctly there. And then what happened was the Lakers end up getting to the conference finals, and there's no Clippers. They had a matchup they could win, and they got recharged by their families and by the opportunity to win a championship. Again, but you're taking it as well, it's an abject failure because of a franchise. Look, if you want to go back to last year, you could also point out that none of these put together fantasy teams win in year one. Mm. They just don't.
Well, okay, hold LeBron, on. I got LeBron a billionaire on Miami. My side. I got LeBron, Steve Ballmer, the billionaire.
Who cares? He doesn't know anything about basketball.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything. He just was so embarrassed that his Clippers locker room fell apart that he fired the coach. Okay? That's how embarrassed he was at the Clippers. Now, on to Ty Lue. I just need to say this. Ty Lue's coaching career takes over for David Blatt, right? They fire David Blatt, LeBron, and a loaded team with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love. Win the championship.
Yep.
Okay. Then the next year they lose in the finals.
Came from behind. They were down 3-1.
They were down 3-1. Draymond suspended.
Andrew Bogut gets hurt. Right. They had some things.
You still
got to
come back from down 3-1. But you have the greatest player in NBA history on your team. The next year you lose in the finals. Second no harm to losing to Durant and Curry. Then you lose again when you have Jeff Green maybe as your second best player behind LeBron in the finals. No big deal. Right. Fired 6 games into the next year. I know they're tanking. Then he lands with Kawhi. So basically, your body of work for judging Ty Lue is, how did he do with LeBron? He won a championship. Then he lost in the finals. No harm done. Now, he's the head coach with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on a super-ish team. How are you? I just don't think we can accurately judge this guy, but at the same time, I'm not saying we need to send him to Orlando, see if he can get to the playoffs, then we'll judge if he's a good coach.
Jason McIntyre, Doug Gottlieb, and for Dan and the Danettes. Look, coaching in the NBA is not as much about, some of it's about finding matchups, which is that appears to be his greatest expertise, right? Is that he can, you give him a game or two, and he'll figure out how to put the puzzle together. And he's like, I don't want to use the directions. I'm going to figure this thing out. And eventually he does figure it out. And keeping guys together. Look, when they're down 2-0 to the Dallas Mavericks, and all those guys go in front of the press and say, not worried, Not at all. And then you look at Ty Lue every time he calls a timeout. Do you see any facial affect at all? You wouldn't know they're winning or they're losing. Nothing, okay? Does not change expressions. So whatever he has been able to teach those players on how to react during adverse situations, you find out about coaches, about players, about human relationships, right? Everything in life is all the same in that you find out about people during times of adversity. And during times of adversity, Ty Lue's a cool cucumber, yeah, and he keeps the team together. If that's not good coaching, no. If you don't think that's good coaching, then you probably shouldn't talk about sports.
I didn't say good coaching. I said that basically we don't know. But you can admit this. Ty Lue has been dealt pocket kings every damn time he's been a head coach in the NBA. True or false?
I don't know. You think it's easy to coach LeBron James?
You're not really doing much. It's LeBron. He's running the show. LeBron went to the finals 8 years in a row because he's the greatest player on the planet. Doug, come on.
He was on a stacked team in a bad conference.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it's still not easy. There's a reason he ran through coaches. He tried to get rid of Spoelstra. There's a reason he did get rid of David
Blatt.
Yeah, because
Spoelstra tried to tell him what to do. Do you think Ty's saying, LeBron, do this? Remember, the famous stuff, Kyrie Irving versus Ty Lue. Ty Lue is telling Kyrie, hey, you got to run the offense. Kyrie Irving basically dropped the basketball on the court and said, this is LeBron's team. You said that. You tell him to do it. I'm not doing it. And Kyrie Irving said, I'm demanding out. That's what happened. That was reported by multiple outlets. Like,
I don't know why you're moving the goalposts on this thing.
There's no goalposts moving.
You're pointing out reaffirming what I said. Hold up. It is hard. If you think it's easy, you think it's easy. Right? Like, look, I don't know. Nobody's pointed this out. Okay, why did Ty Lue turn down the
Lakers? Hold up, Doug. Are you seeing this news?
Did you just
see who got traded in the NBA?
No, Kemba.
Kemba Walker just got traded to OKC. Holy cow. Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting Kemba has been dealt. Oh, they had to unload a pick in the draft. They got Al Horford. Oh, my gosh.
They got Al Horford and his bad contract back.
Moses Brown, former UCLA great.
And a
23-second round pick. Now, the story, not to go too off track here, is that Kemba was very unhappy that the Celtics tried to trade him this year. Danny Ainge, of course. And there was some issues there. And look at this. They
Kemba's
deal him in the middle
knee.
Of the playoffs.
He can't play anymore.
I feel terrible for Kemba because he was awesome when he was healthy.
Then
the knee acts up and now he's gone. Holy cow. So the Celtics are kind of blowing it up.
Hold on. Let me get back and we'll take a break. We'll take a break in a second. Jason,
it's gonna
contain
be fun.
Yourself. Jason, contain yourself. It's okay. It's only 6:18 here on the West Coast.
2 hours of change left, Doug.
Look, the point that you just made about coaching Kyrie Irving is all part of the coaching LeBron James. Like, you have to manage all of these egos. It ain't easy. And he's done a very good job. You haven't heard one peep of complaint like you did last year about Paul George and his lack of leadership, that people didn't take him seriously. You haven't heard anything like that. You didn't hear anything when they're down 2-0. And admit that once they're down 2-0 against the Mavericks and they tied it up, you're like, that series is over. And they found a way, even through adversity in Game 7, to win it. Same thing happened in Utah. The thing felt like it was over after Game 4, and then Kawhi gets hurt. So you can tell me that you don't know. Based upon all of the active evidence, you do know. And oh yeah, by the way, he turned down the Lakers, so he could have coached LeBron James, and he wanted a better deal, got a better deal, and has done as good a job as you can possibly do. So I don't know what the we don't know on Ty Lue.
Jury's still out.
The only jury I can tell you is he has so far been the most impressive coach in the playoffs.
Ooh,
period.
That's spicy.
Stop.
I would need to let that marinate, but there's a guy named Monty Williams who has pretty much wrecked shop with the Phoenix Suns, who I would definitely go that way.
You know what? That's fair. I love Monty, and his story is incredible. And him keeping them together with the Suns, it's a hard one because the Lakers were so injured. But obviously, Monty's done an amazing job with the Suns. That would be absolutely fair for you to point that out. All right, we got a lot to get to. Kemba traded. What's that mean? Kyrie status, Game 7. We'll find out upcoming next.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Where other vans stop short, Mercedes-Benz vans go far beyond. From their customization options to cutting-edge tech to their five-star sales service and financial support crew, Mercedes-Benz vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. So go an extra mile by taking that all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. With Jason McIntyre, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. Happy Meat Friday to you. I did grill out some ribs yesterday. It was a little early. I could have been doing the 6 a.m. West Coast ribs today. That would have been phenomenal for Meat Friday. I got to figure out something. I got to keep it going. I just got to, because McLovin broke out the tofu a couple weeks ago. It just threw my whole world. By the way, where you live, it's very hoity-toity, McIntyre. Do any of your buddies have one of these Mercedes-Benz Sprinter vans?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay, so we have, as you know, I have a basketball program, and we got a big weekend, Coca-Cola Nationals in Garden Grove and in Tustin and in Anaheim. It's a big, you know, youth basketball tournament, and we have a family, the Scott family, and they have the Sprinter van, and we sprint to the Sprinter in between, because, you know, it's like you're there all day, you got all these games, and you're just in between. You go outside, there's a little cocktails and mocktails for the kids and the TVs, and it's pretty awesome. And then to be able to watch these games, you know, while you're at a tournament is awesome. Speaking of games, I think now, you know, now here we are, game seven upcoming between the Nets and the Bucks. And the Bucks, who we had all left for dead, but you have this litany of injuries by the Nets, and now they have new life. Alex Schiffer joins us, Nets beat writer for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Alex_Schiffer. That's S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R. Okay, so Alex, obviously you come off game five where Kevin Durant was otherworldly and Steve Nash is hugging him and holding on to him like Adam Silver should be. And now game six. What was the energy like around the Nets before the game?
I thought it was decent, but not great. You know, funny, Steve Nash was saying post game that he thought the energy and rhythm was lacking throughout the game. You know, you watch them warm up, and James Harden looked a lot better in warm ups than he did before game five, when he was obviously coming off that hamstring injury. And you're thinking, all right, they're going to have a better version of him probably than they did in game five. I don't think you could expect Durant to have another 49-point triple double, but still, you know, give him the playoff version of himself, you know, whatever that is, averaging 35, 34 points a game. And maybe they get another performance or a step-up performance by, you know, Jeff Green at 27 off the bench in that game five. They needed someone else to have a game like that, and that just never really happened. So they never really seemed to get into a groove offensively, and it seems like they never led in the game, and they were just playing catch-up the whole time.
Yeah, Alex, the way I look at it, Kevin Durant was phenomenal in the final, you know, 15-ish minutes of Game 5, but he attempted two free throws last night. I mean, he looked gassed, and I don't know where he's going to suddenly get the energy from. Alex, if I asked you pointedly, who has been the better team in the last eight quarters? Forget about the game, you know, Kyrie left midway through, the Nets were rattled. But if I say the Bucks right now are the better team and they're favored, are you surprised at that? Or do you still think the Nets are the team to beat here?
It's a good question. You know, I could give you a reason for either one. I mean, the home team has won every game of the series. So if people are going into tomorrow night thinking the Nets are the favorite just based on that and by holding home court, I don't blame you. But, you know, I just look at the Nets supporting cast. I mean, offensively and defensively, they really haven't gotten a lot from those guys. And you know, the Bucks, I mean, they had 89 points combined from their three healthy stars last night. You know, Giannis, Jrue Holiday, and Middleton, who was the finals one, was terrific. You know, the Nets, it seems like, are getting what they can out of their stars, but they're just not getting that guy to fill the void that Kyrie left. So I feel like if, you know, you're going to go on star power and health, I think the Bucks have been the better team just because they've been getting the most out of their stars. And we've seen what health has done in the playoffs. I think Milwaukee's been the better team, but I also think that Kevin Durant is a tough guy to bet against in Game 7. So I really feel like it's a toss-up, but I lean Milwaukee right now just because of the momentum.
There's two X factors that we have yet to mention. Let's first start with James Harden, right? Game five, we're like, what is he doing out there? Right? Like, that's tough to, as immobile as sometimes he can be defensively, like it was just bad. They clearly tried to pressure him and stress him last night. There were some moments where he looked a little bit more like James Harden. Is it possible, Alex, that he's improving steadily and we can see a better percentage of the real James Harden in game seven?
I agree with that completely. You know, in game five, he didn't have any elevation in his legs. If you saw him shooting threes, I mean, some of them were hitting off the front of the rim, but clearly he just didn't have it in his legs to get up the way he needed to hit shots. And he was doing that yesterday. I mean, he had the 16 points. He was hitting his threes, 3 for 6 from three. As you said, he didn't look like the guy that was an MVP candidate a few months ago, but he looks closer to what we've been accustomed to. So he made it seem like he's slowly getting better each day, and he's trending in the right direction. But is he going to be in the state that they need him to be for game seven, especially because they don't know who they can count on? That's the real question, yeah.
Yeah, plus game sevens and James Harden haven't always gone together like hand and fist. Okay, what about Kyrie? Are we sure he's not going to play?
I don't expect him to. You know, you look at the replay of the ankle injury. I mean, it he needed a minute to get up, and then it looked like he was like his foot was the side of his foot was flat with the floor with the way it was turned. I'm not expecting him to play in Game Seven tomorrow. I think it's going to have to be Harden and Durant again.
Alex, what about the Olympian, the $16 million a year man, Joe Harris? He has been an abject failure in this series. The last four games, he's shooting 25%. I don't know. I saw him on a milk carton last night as I was making a late-night bowl of cereal. Where the hell is Joe Harris?
It's a great question. You know, to me, you talked about X factors. To me, he is the biggest X factor. I mean, Brooklyn is 13-1 in games when he scores 20 or more points. And that one loss is that crazy game in Washington they had in January where Russell Westbrook went crazy in the final few minutes and they stole that game from them. He's the thermometer of the offense. When he's hitting threes, it opens up everything else for them. And, you know, he's gotten good looks and they just haven't gone in. I mean, some of the threes he shot have been halfway down. They've rimmed out. But as you said, I mean, they need him to play well and you know, I feel like some of the biggest momentum swings in the game last night were, you know, first half, he misses a three. This is about a minute and a half left in the first half. The Nets are down five. He misses a good look from three. Chris Middleton comes down and hits a three. That went from a five-point game to an eight-point game. And then obviously they get it back to five with about 8-9 minutes left in the fourth. And Joe Harris fouls Chris Middleton on a three, and he hits all three. And again, they had a chance to make it. They had a chance to cut it again to a one possession game and they never got closer again. So he's definitely been on had a tough series, as you said, and they need everything they can get out of him in game seven because he's the guy I thought would step up the scoring when Kyrie went down. That just hasn't come.
Yeah, it is fascinating. If they lose in a game seven, what's the overall takeaway from this first season of the big three being together?
I definitely think it's disappointing as a whole because I think people forget sometimes, you know, the Nets contention window was a little bit different than other teams because they signed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving last season knowing that it was a bit of a wash because Kevin Durant was rehabbing the Achilles injury. And now you're in year one and you don't get past the second round. I think that it's still impressive what they were able to do when you think about all the injuries in the big picture. I mean, they had nearly 40 different starting lineups in the regular season. They had nearly 30 different players suit up for them, and they were still able to give Milwaukee a heck of a series. But when it's a championship or bust type season, and you don't even make the conference finals, I think you have to kind of look at it in a disappointing way, right?
Yeah, but I mean, but if you don't have two of your three best players healthy, like what's the reality of it is? There's just limitations to what you can get. Like they are built around these three players. And you have one and a half of them right now. Look, that's the danger of it, right? That's the danger of constructing a team that way. But this is the reality. If healthy, they're still playing. If not, they probably go home.
No, I agree completely. And as you, it's been a weird year for injuries in the NBA. Again, it's not like, you know, Kyrie was the most durable star in the regular season. He played more than Harden or Durant did in just terms of total games. And as you said, it's bad luck. It's going to be interesting to kind of see what their offseason looks like, because a lot of these guys are on one-year deals, you know, the Jeff Green and Blake Griffin type guys. Just how they try to keep this core together around these three is going to be interesting going into next season.
Alex, great stuff, man. Look forward to reading your next piece in The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Alex_Schiffer. Alex, appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, the pleasure's all ours. Is your dad's razor older than you are? Get him something new for Father's Day. A DSC six-blade razor is perfect for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you or as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/Patrick. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Patrick. Here's the, and I want to get to the news of the moment in a second with Kemba Walker being traded to the Oklahoma City Thunder. If there's a trade involving draft picks and a star trying to salary dump, you can almost always guess it's the Oklahoma City Thunder right now. I think it's important for people to understand that there's a construct to a team, right? So Dante DiVincenzo goes down, for example, for the Milwaukee Bucks. I think that threw them for a loop, right? It hurts their ability their smaller lineup isn't nearly as strong. He's a very versatile defender, super athletic, and he had his best season as a pro this year. But the way that team is built is put it in Giannis's hands, and then occasionally you put it in Drew Holiday or Middleton's hands. But there's like a pecking order, and they're built around Giannis. Every team is different. Right? Whereas you look at now how the Nets are built, they're built around having three players, and the rest are just fill-in guys who used to be something, and now they're just trying to find a secondary or even tertiary role. You know, this is one of the things with LeBron's teams. When LeBron, up until this year, and maybe last year, they've been built, hey, let's build a team around LeBron James. So when he's not in, obviously it's a completely different team. When he's not in, they struggle to learn how to play without him, and then when he returns, struggle to learn how to play with him. Every team is different, and when you have injuries that strike at the construct of the normal team, that's when you really fail to function long term. And that's what's happened with the Nets. You lose two stars, or you're playing with an injured James Harden without Kyrie Irving, boy, it is really hard to compete at this level. That's it, Jason?
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally disagree with everything, but I was just looking
at this. How do you disagree with it?
No, I mean, I disagree with one thing, okay? You bashed James Harden. You got a little dig earlier. James Harden never shows up in Game 7. And, Doug, I'm a good listener, okay? I heard that, and I said, you know, it's weird. Kyrie's hurt. Let me go look quickly at Kyrie Irving's playoff history, okay? Are you ready for this? I just dug this up. This year, hurt. Last year, hurt. Nets missed the playoffs. 2019, they lost to Milwaukee. 2018, he was hurt. And remember, he missed Game 7 Celtics versus the Cavs. He wasn't even on the bench for Game 7 in Boston. Year before that, lost to Golden State.
Knee surgery.
They did win. And in 2015, the first year they got LeBron back, he got hurt in Game 1 of the Finals. If memory serves, by adding it up, by elementary math, this is the third time he's been injured in the playoffs in the last 7 years, and he's going to miss pivotal games at the end of a series. If we're going to ding Chris Paul, he's always hurt in the playoffs. If we're going to ding James Harden, he never shows up. When are we going to hold Kyrie Irving to the same standards?
Huh? He sprained his ankle, Jason.
He's hurt every year, Doug.
He sprained his ankle when he missed time. Like, look, if you wanted to say that some of the comments that he's made, and there have been some times in which you don't know if he loves hoop as much as his talent tells you he should love hoop, like, that'd be okay. But if you want to tell me, like, a guy is, like, okay, so when he missed Game 7 with the Celtics, when he missed the end of that Celtics run, it was because his kneecap split in two when he was with the Cavs in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. They kept it together with wire mesh, right? And drilled three screws into his knee. Okay? Then you fast forward to when he's with the Celtics, and the wire mesh was bothering him. They took it out, and it was a good thing that they went in because the screws were infected, so they had to clean out the knee, and they didn't know if that bone would fully heal properly, so they held him out. Like, if you want to tell me that that's some sort of, in any way, comparison to James Harden's abject failures in big games, going back to when he's in Oklahoma City as a young player and he's awful in the finals, going to Houston time and again, they not only got beat, they got beat at home.
Yeah, but,
and he doesn't show up.
Okay, I love
it. If you want to compare that to a guy spraining his ankle on national TV, which we all saw it, that's just bad luck. That's just sports. Mm-hmm. Okay. But enjoy an island. I don't really understand the island that you want.
I feel like we bash Harden excessively. This was the number one guy in Houston. And when you fail and you're the number one guy, it all falls on your shoulders. But look around at those Houston rosters. Were they ever favored, Doug? Did they ever totally collapse when they should have won? It's not like he's choking like Doc Rivers. He's leading a team full of decent players, and they came up short against the mighty Warriors multiple times. I don't think that's the end of the world. I'm just going to ask you again, why has Kyrie three times in the last 7 years ended his season with injury? Why is he always hurt? Is he fragile? Is he made of glass? I'm not bashing the guy. I like Kyrie.
You just said, is he fragile? Is he made of glass?
Well, I mean, these are facts, Doug. These are facts.
Hey, no disrespect. No disrespect, but let me say something disrespectful.
These are facts. What's wrong? Factual. Kyrie Irving is always hurt in the playoffs.
He rolled his ankle.
Okay.
Like, he's always hurt in the playoffs. You think he can control these things? You think you control if you roll your ankle?
He's always hurt in the playoffs. That is a factual statement. I mean, you could do with that what you want, but he's always hurt.
Look,
he's had
injuries going back to Duke, right? He had the big toe.
That's
at Duke.
Right. He played seven games at Duke.
He's had an amazing litany of injuries.
Yeah.
And everybody, you combine that with the fact that he's a little bit of a bizarre personality, but you have to accept those things going in because he's a marvelous talent. And where the Nets have gotten kind of figured it out is they took the ball out of his hands and they had James Harden be the point guard, and it was working. The problem is that he sprained his ankle. The problem is that James Harden has a bad hamstring. Heck, the guy coming off the Achilles tendon tear has been the most durable here in the playoffs for him, right?
That is a good point.
So these things do happen. All right, we'll turn to football upcoming next. An unnamed member of another front office had some not so nice things to say about Aaron Rodgers.
Ugh.
Why he is absolutely right and wrong at the same time. With Jason McIntyre, I'm Doug Gottlieb. That's next on the Dan Patrick Show.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason McIntyre, I'm Doug Gottlieb. In for Dan, the Danettes. Happy Meat Friday to you. We also have continuing conference playoff games in the NBA. But just a little whet your appetite. Big trade news in the NBA. We'll talk about it top of the hour. Kemba Walker dealt from the Celtics. What's it mean?
All right, Doug, quick question on that. Have you ever been to Siberia?
I have.
We got to ask Kemba Walker what it's like in OKC.
Wow, why do you say that? Because you don't think they're going to be good?
What do you mean, do I think? Come on, they've been tanking for years, bro. So I mean, OKC is
Siberia. They were actually pretty good 2 years ago.
I think they have more first-round picks in the next 5 years than they'll have wins.
No, it's crazy. But this is all part and parcel to the biggest problem. The NBA has a major problem on their hands. They know it. And it yesterday was Zion Williams.
Yeah, it's not fixable.
It's not fixable?
No.
Okay, we'll get to that top of the hour. An unnamed general manager from another club called Aaron Rodgers selfish. Right? What is your reaction, Jason?
I'm not surprised. You know, how many of these athletes at the top of their game are considered selfish. Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady, LeBron James, all the greats. Are
Tom Brady's considered selfish? When did that happen?
Come on. They draft Jimmy Garoppolo. He's ticked off. He goes and wins the MVP and demands Garoppolo get traded. Like, yeah, I mean, come on, these superstars.
I think you're misusing selfish. Kobe Bryant was selfish because Kobe Bryant was a selfish basketball player. He just was.
I mean, yeah, Tom Brady did some unselfish things. I'll take less money because my bikini model wife's worth $500 million. That's unselfish. But as a player, a lot of these guys are selfish. They know what's best. They're the greats all time. Michael Jordan, extremely selfish. There's nothing wrong with Aaron Rodgers being selfish.
Now that portion of it, I do actually agree with, right? Like it's a little bit like the flag controversy. To be totally honest, because
I don't know the flag controversy.
You know, the kneeling before the flag.
When
people say it's disrespectful, it is disrespectful. Anyone who does it to bring attention to something, right? It's intentionally disrespectful. And what Aaron Rodgers is doing is intentionally selfish. And he has a championship caliber team. And in order for, he believes, to get his point across, or maybe to get traded, or maybe to get out of town, or maybe to get a new contract, he's doing something which is inherently selfish. The question is he a selfish guy 365 days a year? Is he a selfish person where this is only the tip of the iceberg for all of the Aaron stuff? That's different. This is from a Michael Lombardo fan-sided, quoted an ex-NFL GM saying the guy's selfish, teammates don't like it, coaches don't like him. It's all about Aaron. They deal with him because he's a superstar. He helps guys make money, put food on their table for their kids, and people respect him for that, right? It's the old, he's respected, but he's not really liked. Right? He's respected, but not really liked, which is interesting. And it's an interesting way to go about life. And it may tell us a little bit more about why Green Bay has not succeeded more, right? Because the key to being a quarterback is those guys have to want to kill for you, right? They just do. They want to. And I don't know if it's always been the case in Green Bay. I think they like him. I think they love him? I don't know. Okay, but I do think what he's doing is intentionally selfish. I just don't know what positive outcome he thinks is going
to
happen.
Real quick story. A guy was drafted, a tight end, to the Packers. He starts showing up, you know, for practice and minicamp and all that stuff. Aaron Rodgers does not acknowledge him in the hallway. They walk past each other, not even a head nod, nothing. Okay? That's just Aaron Rodgers. He's a different dude. This tight end realized, oh, man, he doesn't like me. But that wasn't it. Aaron Rodgers is just a different guy, kind of guy. His personality's prickly. It doesn't appeal to everyone. I don't think it's the end of the world. He's still a top five quarterback on the planet.
All right. Jason's going to get into Doc Rivers. I'm going to talk about Kemba Walker. We'll get you ready for more Hoop tonight. That's up coming next. With Jason McIntyre, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Dan Patrick Show.